afternoon, everybody. So first, thanks to the organizers for organizing and, of course, for inviting me to my first live talk since the pandemic. Like many people here have the same situation, so it's really nice. So yeah, so today I'm going to talk about, what does this mean, deconfined multicriticality. So the topic is basically mainly on a specific model, the Shastri-Sutherland model, and I will tell you what that is if you don't know, and as well as some related, other spin-1/2models. So in addition to that, specific model, I will tell you about some new general insights that I think we have into deconfined quantum criticality. And also, I'm going to talk about some really recent experiments that I think are quite excited. And this animation, I think many of you have seen, and maybe many of you have stolen it like I did from the web. So it shows a layer of strontium copper borite, where these black circles are copper ions that have spin-1/2. And you can distort that lattice into the Shastri-Sutherland lattice. And it turns out that that material is really well described by the model, and some exciting things happen there, as you will see. Okay, let me quickly mention my collaborators. Actually, only my main collaborators in this work today. Ling Wang, she's my former student. Now she's a professor at Zhejiang University. And her students and many others have been involved, and I will mention them later on when I come to specific parts. And the experiments that I was involved in, actually this started when I was a visitor at the Institute of Physics in Beijing for some time. Oops, what happened now? Yeah. Okay, and so I met a lot of experimentalists that I started to collaborate with there, including Weichang Yu and his postdoc, Yi Cui. Okay, so about the Shastri-Sutherland model. So it's basically the square lattice Heisenberg model, which nearest neighbor interactions, this term here. And in addition, there are these diagonal interactions on some of the plaquettes, as you see. So these couplings, JJ prime, they're both antiferromagnetic, and I will often refer to the ratio of these two couplings. So this model was introduced by Shastri and Sutherland in 1982. Oh, so it's like the 40th anniversary, in fact, this year. So it's an important model in quantum magnetism. So they constructed this model explicitly so that it would have an exact eigenstate, which is in fact the ground state for some range of this coupling ratio. And that's just singlets, forming on these red bonds here. So that's the ground state until this ratio reaches a certain value, which is not given by the exact solution, but there have been lots of numerical works. And in the end, it's not really the fact that there's an exact ground state that's the most interesting aspect of this, but the fact that you actually have other phases here. Well, it's clear that you have an antiferromagnetic phase, if J becomes very large, so G becomes large. But in addition, there's this plaquette singlet solid, as I will call it, where instead of singlets forming on those red bonds, they form on these empty plaquettes. And that can happen in two different ways, right? So this is showing one way here. And they can also form in the plaquettes that are not with these bold lines right now. So it's a symmetry broken, spontaneously symmetry broken phase, twofold degenerate ground state. So this picture is from one of the papers by Korbotz and Mila several years ago, where they did tensor product states and got these phase boundaries here. And they also argued, based on their calculation, that the transition between the plaquette singlet and the nail state is first order. So in the end, that's the most interesting aspect, maybe, as we will see, of this model, that there may be this direct transition between plaquette and nail phase, and that actually in a more recent work, that has been proposed as a candidate for a deconfined quantum critical point. So these two works here, they don't really agree with each other in the way they propose that the transition goes here. So here it's claimed that it's a continuous, generic deconfined critical point with O4 emergent symmetry at the transition between between those states. Okay, let me not discuss details of their work, but just to say that there's this controversy, what's going on there. So what we have been doing with Ling Wang and her students, we have two papers. So one is on DMRG, as these people here, but we applied DMRG in a different way, as you will see. Well, namely, we did level crossing, so we'll talk about the level crossing method. And in a very recent work, we did exact diagonalization, which maybe we should have done first, but we did DMRG first. But I will talk about the exact diagonalization first.
Question?
Yep.
What's the space group of this lattice?
Say again?
What's the space group of this lattice?
The space what?
Space group.
Space group. Well, I don't know all the terminology, but you can see you have translations with, two lattice spacings, and you have some reflections and gliding reflections. I will say a bit more about that.
Does the dimer phase break any symmetry?
No, the dimer phase doesn't break any symmetry.
Okay.
The Plaquet phase breaks Z2. The Nell phase breaks O3, of course. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so what's the level crossing method? Let me discuss that first in the context of a well-known case, the one-dimensional frustrated Heisenberg chain with J1 and J2 interactions. So that has a dimerization transition when this coupling ratio is around 0.24. So of course, for smaller g, it's just like the Heisenberg chain. It has a unique singlet ground state on a finite lattice, and it's a critical state with 1 over r spin correlations. And it turns out to be important that the lowest excitation above the ground state is a triplet, two spin-on state, but on a finite system, the triplet combination of the spin-ons is lower. Now, for g's larger than gc, it's a dimerized system, so you have two symmetry broken ground states, and of course the actual ground states, if you take a periodic lattice with an even number of sides, you can think of as the even and odd combinations of those. So the ground state degeneracy is broken in a finite system. So now you can look at the excitations. Well, so the black line here is the ground state, and then there's the singlet and triplet lowest excited states. And you can see that the singlet and triplet, they cross each other at a point here. And why do they do that? Well, because the ground state has to change, the first excitation has to change from a triplet to a singlet when you enter this doubly degenerate singlet state. That's doubly degenerate in the thermodynamic limit. And that turns out to be the best way to extract the dimerization transition point. You just follow this crossing point as a function of the system size, and it turns out that the corrections, how it shifts, go like 1 over n squared, and you can just extrapolate in and find the critical coupling, which is this value. Now, this kind of approach was started by Nomura and Okamoto in the context of this model, but it's a very often used method in 1D systems. So these figures are from my own paper there, but I just repeated what other people had done. So now we want to apply this kind of method to the Shastri-Sutherland model. So let me discuss first what we do with exact diagonalization and small clusters. Yeah, I mean, there are lots of examples. I don't really want to list them here because it takes a long time. But there are many 1D systems. For example, I can just mention, maybe at the end I can show you, we can add long-range interactions to this 1D model, and that actually gives us some additional confirmation of what we are doing here with the Shastri-Sutherland model. But it's a very well often used.
Theoretically, I would not expect level crossing will give me precise position of transition?
Well, it depends on what kind of theorist you are, because this is supposed.
This
supposedly
case.
Follows from the Affleck, Haldane, and so on.
Yeah, this model is a special case, but
right.
Generically, you don't.
Well,
I don't expect.
Okay, so you have a quantum phase transition which changes the ground state, right? And that normally is done through you may say an avoided level crossing or something like that, but the excitations can also change qualitatively when the ground state changes. So if the lowest excitation in one phase is in a different symmetry sector from another phase, you will have the level crossing. So it's not like a completely general thing in that it always has to happen, but it often happens. Okay, we can discuss after if you feel that this is all BS, but I think it's not. Okay, so let's look at, what we do is, these small clusters, so they're very small. And the question is, can we see something there? And later on I will discuss DMRG as well. So in the same way as in the 1D chain that I just discussed, we can think of the ground states of the Plaquette singlet phase as even and odd combinations of those symmetry broken patterns. So what we did was, just look at the two lowest singlet states, the two lowest triplets, and the lowest quintuplet state. Okay, and then we can, similar to the 1D case, we can argue that, the gaps will tell us something. So we look at gaps relative to the ground state, of course. So we look at the gap to the second singlet, we look at the gap to the first triplet, and we look at some other gaps as well, but let me just focus on the most important ones. Now we also look at what we call composite gaps, which are not gaps to the ground state, but for example, this little delta T is the gap between the second triplet and the second singlet. Okay, so it's a triplet excitations on top of something that's already a singlet excitation. And we can look at something similar with a quadruplet as well, but let me not get into that. So then we can again see that in the Plaquette singlet solid phase, the singlet gap eventually has to be the smallest, okay? So a criterion for the Plaquette singlet solid is that this holds, okay? And then we can also make arguments about the antiferromagnetic phase. We can use the fact that we have these Anderson rotor states, with energies that scale as 1 over n. Okay, and that means actually that the singlet can no longer be the smallest gap in the antiferromagnetic phase because there's no tower state with the singlet. The lowest singlet can go at most as 1 over l. Okay, so then we again can look at these gaps and as a function of G, and we can see where we have crossings, and that can give us the phase transitions. Okay, so here's one example, from exact diagonalization. You see these here, the lowest gap is the singlet, and then that crosses the triplet, the green one, and there are some other crossings here. We again want to look at the size dependence of those crossing points. So the singlet triplet crossing gives us what I call GC1, which should be the end of the Plaquette singlet solid phase by the arguments before. And if you look at, we have several choices here, but I mentioned this one. If you look at this triplet gap as it crosses the singlet gap, that should mark the start of the antiferromagnetic phase. This crossing here, which I jumped over, it should also mark that GC2. Okay, so this is what we get here. So these points, plotted as a function of 1 over n here, they're not completely falling on a smooth curve because the clusters have, different shapes and so on, which will affect things, unfortunately. But you can see that still they fall, at least the two lowest ones here, fall, roughly on straight lines, and we can fit straight lines. And again, this should mark the end of the Plaquette solid, singlet solid phase, and this should mark the beginning of the antiferromagnetic phase, and there's a gap between them. So that would suggest that actually there's another phase in there between. But you may not be really convinced here because there are these unsmoothness here, and also the systems are very small. But one thing that you can see here is that these crossing points, if you just look for a fixed n, you see that when the green or red goes down, they both go down, right? So they move around in unison a little bit, And if you look at these other crossing points, they also, in fact, do that. So what we can do is we can take all this group of points and shift them up or down in such a way that the squares, the red squares, land exactly on the line. Then it's like we're really more carefully looking at just the spacing between red and green, which would actually mark the size of this hypothetical new face. So this is how it looks then. Now, of course, the red ones, it's still the same line as before because that's what we enforced. But you see that the green one, we can fit almost perfectly to a line if we exclude at least that point. And for these to fit, we need a correction, but it's all consistent with there being another phase there in this range of G values. Yep, please.
So have you tried putting some twist in the boundary conditions?
No, we did not try that here, okay. But yeah, that's probably something that should be done.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so what could this phase be? Well, I will say now, I think it's a candidate for a gapless spin liquid phase. I will show a little bit more evidence for that in a minute. Okay, so this was now what we did from exact diagonalization, but as I mentioned, we also did DMRG, and in fact, we did the DMRG first. Okay, so that's already published. The other one is on archive. So the difference is, in DMRG, we use these cylindrical lattices, which are open in the x direction and periodic in the y direction for technical reasons, as people doing DMRG know about. But then, of course, the total number of spins can be much larger. But then an additional complication with these cylindrical lattices is that we actually break the twofold symmetry of the ground state, or twofold degeneracy, I should say, because the boundaries will prefer one of the patterns. So now we can no longer argue in the same way about the singlet, triplet crossing, but we can actually still make some arguments, but let me not talk about that here because I don't want to spend too much time on that, just show you some results from DMRG up to L equals 12, in some cases 10, in other cases we can extract the gaps, and I can guarantee you pretty much that Ling is extremely careful, everything is converged in the discarded weight, and everything, we present all the details in the paper. In addition, the singlet actually has a minimum here. And again, this is not the lowest singlet if you think of the infinite lattice, because the ground state degeneracy is broken. So now we can do what we did before. We can look at these level crossings as a function of size. And again, they extrapolate to two points that indicate that there's another phase there in between. This singlet minimum itself also extrapolates to one of those points. Okay, so of course the referee here was quite skeptical because he said, the face is so small that there must be some error here. But what can we do if the face is small? That's what it is, and we just try to find it. But of course, we also have to take things like that seriously. So that's why we also tested all this with the periodic small lattices, and amazingly enough, I think that this gap here in between almost agrees completely between these two different methods, which have different cluster shapes, even different gap crossings, and so on. So one thing that we don't really understand, but we have seen it also in other models, and it's also the case in the 1D model, that the drift is very precisely described by 1 over L squared. So we have been trying to ask more field theory-minded people, maybe somebody here can help us, that why is it 1 over L squared? It's just an empirical finding for us. Okay, so let me just quickly show some finite size scaling of gaps inside. So let's focus on these green and blue here. They correspond to inside the new phase, singlet and triplet gaps, and they seem to go like 1 over L, so that would be, mean some kind of Z equals 1 state. And also we have looked at correlation functions and so on, and we see that the staggered magnetization decays with something that at least can be described by a power law. It looks similar to, well, something like 1 over r to 1 plus 8 with eta around 0.2. So we think that it's a gapless spin liquid, but we have not really investigated or thought much about, you know, what kind of spin liquid it could be. Okay, now let me look at another model, which is which we looked at, you know, a few years ago, which we called the checkerboard JQ model. So what's that? Well, it's motivated by the Shastri-Sutherland model. But the problem with that model, the Shastri-Sutherland one, is that you cannot do quantum Monte Carlo, and that's why we're limited to rather small systems and so on. So we came up with this model which has the same kind of plaquette singlet solid phase, but we can do quantum Monte Carlo. So that we call the checkerboard JQ model, because this Q term, which is a four-spin term, only sits on you know, the well, half of the plaquettes in this checkerboard pattern. So then we actually also have a two-fold degenerate plaquette singlet solid phase here, because you can break the symmetry and form singlets like that, or they can form like that. And we have studied that in great detail. So at least the plaquette singlet state and the antiferromagnetic state, those are the same as in the Shastri-Sutherland model. So we do simulations. And without going into details, what we find is a common transition point between the where the plaquette singlet phase vanishes and the antiferromagnetic phase starts. So in this case, we don't think there's anything in between. In addition, as you see in this graph here, these show the squared order parameters as a function of 1 over L, and clearly they both extrapolate to non-zero values, so there's actually a long-range order, you know, for both order parameters coexisting at the transition point. So it's a first-order transition in this case. But it's actually an unusual first-order transition, because what we can see is that there's actually emergent O4 symmetry on the coexistence state, in the coexistence state. So to do that, we have looked at the a combined order parameter. We take the plaquette order parameter, which is a scalar, and we combine that with the O3 AFM order parameter. And then we look at the probability distribution in the simulations of you know, the plaquette order parameter and one component of the AFM order parameter. And we have done that for many different system sizes and investigated it in different ways. Let me just show one result here. So here is the probability distribution color-coded. And so the antiferromagnetic order parameter is here. You know, the zero is in the low left corner here. And the plaquette order parameter is here on the y-axis. So now you see a blob here. So that means that this is really in the plaquette ordered phase. If we go to the antiferromagnetic phase, and notice that these numbers are quite close to each other, so these are just, you know, on either side of the transition, very close to the transition point. Here you see this elongated shape along the x-axis, and that's because we take a three-component vector and we project it down to one component, so then you should see actually a sharp line, you know, if there are no fluctuations. You know, even here you would see a delta function in the thermodynamic limit, but this is all broadened by finite size. But then in between, where the transition happens, it's basically like a flat disk with rounded edges, and that actually corresponds to this this being the points living on the surface of an O4 sphere. So we argue based on this that there's actually emergent O4 symmetry, which probably doesn't exist up to, you know, infinite length scales, but it exists up to some very long length scales. So we think that this is because this model is close to a deconfined critical point which has O4. Okay, and that is still influencing the system on the first order line attached to that deconfined critical point. So what we can do now is to imagine now that you combine these two models. They have the same kind of plaquette phase, the same kind of antiferromagnetic phase, but one of them has a gap in between these two ordered phases, the other one has a direct transition. So what happens if we take, you know, in a pictorial way, we take some h times the JQ model and 1 minus h times the Shastri-Sutherland model, and we follow what happens. Then something like this should happen. If h is 0, and this here g can be, you know, the tuning parameter, you know, you put it on some sort of common footing in this model. So you can imagine that this is exactly like the Shastri-Sutherland model I talked about. You have the spin liquid phase, and then you increase this h, so you turn on these q terms. Then you cross the first order line. So this actually brought us to the scenario that actually, you know, the O4 DQCP here is a multi-critical, you know, fine-tuned point that actually is the tip of a spin-liquid phase and the starting of this first order line. And that was also partially motivated by something we did before, where we looked at an SO5 deconfined critical point or a model that we believe has that. And in that case, we find a new relevant operator. So we also think that that is fine-tuned. So our generic scenario is that the deconfined critical point is not a generic transition between either, you know, Plaquette singlet or VBS and the antiferromagnetic phase, but it's the end point of a spin liquid, and after that, it's first order. Yep. Well, you may say that, you know, this has a bit more symmetry than that. Yeah. But still, you know, if you start to, you know, if you are in the Plaquette singlet phase, you know, in one of the models and turn on the other interaction, it's not like it's going to change the phase or anything. So even if the lattice has different symmetry, it doesn't mean that I think at least that it would affect that. It's like if you take the Ising model and make, you know, every second column weaker or stronger, it's not going to ruin the Ising critical point.
The point may be sensitive to that.
Yeah, you know, it potentially, but you know, if the deconfined critical point is in the generic case where you have combined, then the symmetry is always, you know, the one which is the lower one, right?
Okay.
But yeah, good point. Okay, so let me quickly do something on the experiments. Let's see, how much time do I have left? Like almost 15, right?
7 left.
Okay, 7 left. I started 1:15, right? So, oh, okay, it's 35, but it's 35 plus 10, okay.
No, it's fine.
Just tell me when I have to stop. Okay, now let me talk about some experiments that are related to this. So first, again, this was something I was involved with when I was in China. So this is done experiments in the lab of Li Ling Sun, who is an expert on high pressure measurements. And I think Zhuyang Meng may be in the audience too, or maybe it's too early where he is in the morning, but he may listen to this remotely. So I should definitely point out that he was also involved in this, and some several of his group members and one of my students as well. So, using the heat capacity, they were able to extract the phase diagram, at least, you know, many interesting parts of it, as a function of the external pressure and the temperature. So the interesting aspects for what we are talking about here is that there's a transition into the Plaquette singlet solid and into the antiferromagnetic phase. And again, you know, this material, you know, maps onto the Shastri-Sutherland model to a great degree. And the interesting thing is that unfortunately that is covered now, but G, the coupling ratio, depends on the pressure, and quite strongly so. So by looking at the specific heat, you see there's like a big bump here, and the bump location is mapped out here, but that's not a phase transition, but there are some smaller peaks here, and we can associate those to phase transitions, and we can say something about gapped and gapless and so on. So that maps out this Plaquette singlet and antiferromagnetic phase. I should mention that there were also a neutron scattering study earlier where they found a new mode at one point here, which they associated with the Plaquette singlet solid phase, but they didn't extract the phase diagram. But their result was why we can quite confidently believe that this is the Plaquette singlet solid. It's definitely a gapped phase, and there's a change in the gap as you cross here and so on. But now you see that there's this white area here, and that's for technical reasons, because of the equipment. This was done in two different pressure cells, types of pressure cells, and and cooling systems and so on. And we could not really reach this region here. And we thought that, okay, this may be a deconfined corner critical point there as had been proposed. But since I talked about the Chastity-Sutherland model, and now we think that, you know, there's a spin liquid there, maybe, you know, there's also a spin liquid in this white region here, but that has to be studied more. Now, the really recent work here is the same material, and this again is in the lab of Wei-Chang Yu in Renmin University and his postdoc. And now they add a magnetic field and they do NMR on the boron atoms. And basically this is very quickly the result here. They can, using various NMR signals, they can map out phase boundaries as a function of the field and temperature. And they can, you know, see signals that identify these phases as plaquette, singlet, antiferromagnetic. I will show a little bit. Don't worry about this terminology, PS liquid and so on. This is just some sharp crossover here. But you see that these phase transitions, they come together at a very low temperature. This is a blow up of this whole thing at two different pressures. So, you know, trying to do various fits and so on, one can say that this common points where they, point where they come together is around 0.06 Kelvin. and around 6 Tesla, the point goes down a little bit with increasing pressure. Now, with NMR, one can, for example, identify the AFM order by line splitting, and we can also look at the spin lattice relaxation rate, and the transition point from spin lattice relaxation is this dashed line, and that turns out to be more precise. But this line splitting clearly, it actually acts as a proxy order parameter, so we can look at the order parameter as a function of field in this way. And we can see, based on these results also, that the transition is first order when they come together. But it's less strongly first order at the higher pressure than at the lower pressure. Okay? So we see phase coexistence, we see smaller discontinuity at higher pressure. And these, you know, TC values, you know, if you have a first order transition, you should not normally expect a very low TC. And furthermore, we see at the higher pressure, we see basically quantum critical scaling in the spin lattice relaxation rate. It's plotted here. I can describe more carefully if somebody wants to. But we have some indication that the transition becomes weakly first order and use EVNC scaling. So the theory scenario here is that if you look at, you know, field temperature, as I just showed you, let me pull up this picture here. And now, you know, let's put pressure on this axis here. So if I move, you know, in this direction, the pressure increases, and then I go from the plaquette singlet phase and eventually to the AFM phase, but this is done in a high field, and we think that there may be a spin liquid there in zero field. And then you can just think, okay, what happens if I add a magnetic field in a spin liquid, whatever the spin liquid is? It's not completely clear what happens, but I think it would survive for some time, and it could potentially end in a triple point, or it could even be that this is close to the O4 critical point that we talked about before. And so we believe at the highest pressure that we are actually coming very close to this point so that we can see this quantum critical fan here that is expected. So that's basically what we're seeing, and there's a lot more to it that I can tell you in private if you like. Do I have like 1 minute to summarize or? Okay, so I do want to discuss my summary a little bit. So we believe that there's this narrow spin liquid phase, but you may ask, is that surprising? Okay. So I think it's surprising in the sense that there have been many, many studies of this model, and none of them have seen it, and there's no theory prediction. So in that sense, yeah, it's surprising. But on the other hand, it's maybe not so surprising because, you know, there are many frustrated systems people have looked at with DMRG and tensors and so on, And all of them have some claims of spin liquid phases. So why should not the Shastri-Sutherland model have a spin liquid phase as well? The other thing, you know, more generally, which I didn't really talk too much about, but we have a lot of new evidence that the deconfined critical points probably are fine-tuned in general. And then, you know, this multicriticality has already stimulated some, you know, theory interest. And I believe that Zhenke Xu is probably listening remotely. So he, if somebody's interested, maybe he can say more about that. But they have this theory of self-duality protected multicriticality that can you know, explain the first order transition ending in a critical point. And with some modification of their scenario, they can even explain that a spin liquid phase could open up. So that's very interesting. And some related work on spin liquids between these kind of singlet phases and AFM phases have also been discussed by Subir Sachdev and his postdocs in these papers here. Okay, now about the material. So, you know, the material seems to realize the model quite nicely, and with NMR experiments, which are really surprisingly you know, well able to detect phase transitions, I have to say that I was quite surprised how well that works. And of course, then the big question is there a spin liquid in the material in this unexplored, well, here it says wire, but I don't know what I was thinking, white, in the white region in my phase diagram. And if there is, I think that may actually be really nice, because unlike some of these other spin liquid candidates, all these Kagome systems and so on, strontium copper borite can be made in very clean single crystals. There's not a lot of impurity. So maybe we could finally have you know, a clean spin liquid candidate. Of course, the pressure has to be high, so it's not easy to do experiments, but nevertheless, thank you very much.
Never caught it correctly. So, very nice talk. Thanks. So, I have heard about spin liquid in Shastri-Sutherland model. When you apply a very strong magnetic field, you have magnetization plateau.
Oh, yeah, a good point.
So
we have not explored that region. So, you know, in the material as well, actually, I was sort of guessing that there could be some question about that. So, let me show you what happens in the experiment here when you, you know, go to these very high fields, what's the induced magnetization? And it's actually super small. So this is the night shift, and from that you can get the magnetization. And this is a normalized. So one would be full polarization here. Mm-hmm. And you can see at the transition, you know, within the statistical errors of the experiments, you can almost not say that the magnetization jumps even. So you would expect, and we have, you know, model studies and so on, that the the transition as a function of field is first order, also in models, right? But the jump is extremely small, and even at 15 Tesla, you have maybe at most, you know, 2% polarization. So we are not yet at these pressures, we are not yet in the regime where you see some magnetization plateaus.
What about theory? Because the nature of the spin liquid in the plateau region has been suspected to be chiral, and many interesting speculations are there.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I'm not an expert in spin liquids, and we are trying to talk to people like Zhenke Xu and Yi Chuang You and other people you know, who are experts on spin liquid, what could be expected. The only thing we can really say is that it appears to be, you know, a Z equals one, you know, maybe some Dirac type spin liquid, but the Dirac spin liquid is supposed to break down you know, on this kind of lattices, and then that's in zero field. In with the magnetic field, I really don't know what we should expect, and clearly that's something we should look more at.
So you showed the relaxation rate,
right?
So, you know, experiment, right, and find.
Yeah, so maybe I can show that in the raw data for the relaxation rate. If you focus on this graph, this is 1/T1. As a function of temperature at the higher pressure. And you see here that, you know, the before, you know, you see this big drop. This big drop is because you enter the gapped phase when you cross the phase transition into the plaquette singlet state. But above that, you see some short region that in at least some cases is pretty substantial, where the slope, it seems to be a power law with the same slope everywhere. So what I showed you before was that we take those data and just shift them to the same line, because the offset here, if you think, okay, it's some power law, but if you're not exactly at the critical point, it should not actually go exactly to zero. So we try to model the offset there to make it collapse all on one line. But basically, it's that. And the point is also that you don't see that at the lower pressure. There's no common slope in any of this data here. So that's what makes us believe that as we increase the pressure, we come closer to a critical point so that we can see this influence at finite T, you know, in this theory scenario you expect. Even if we are not exactly, you know, maybe because of 3D effects and also the emergent O3 that I really didn't talk much about here, but that's not really exact. We expect that the transition is not really continuous on this line, but the TC is very low. So then we think that if the temperature is higher than that low TC, then we should see this quantum critical fan.
Yeah, so would the rate correspond to some Critios
form? Oh yeah, exactly. So the rate should immediately give us the exponent eta. And we got the value 0.2, which is actually very close to what numerical calculations say that eta should be. So, you know, maybe that would be too much to believe, so I didn't even want to say that, but yeah, that's actually, you know, it is close to what's expected.
And another question is about your gapless spin liquid. I think numerically you find a critical exponent eta, right?
Yeah, so but you know, it's very hard to really say numerically what the power law is.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment.
Yeah.
I don't think that eta is consistent with a critical spin liquid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it should be much larger, right?
But on the other hand,
have a critical spin liquid, one prediction is very concrete. Uh-huh. There will be no relevant singlet under your UV symmetries, and that can easily give you a very rigorous bound.
But that's probably some kind of spin liquid, right? I mean, there could be many types of gapless spin liquids, I guess.
Yeah, but if z equals 1, then...
Well, okay, so z equals 1, exactly. Well, but a Dirac spin liquid, that would be z equals 1, right?
Yeah, so if you have z equals 1, doesn't necessarily mean Lorentz invariant, but it's very likely.
Right.
And once you have that, it's also likely you have conformal invariance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then,
I don't know, but
then the bootstrap bound would apply.
Right. And I'm always a bit suspicious when people tell me, oh, that cannot happen, because sometimes there are other scenarios that have not been considered yet, right? So you don't know any candidate that this would fit with, or right?
It was a question to you. Do you know a candidate that would fit with?
Oh, no, I don't.
All right. Sorry. Can I ask her? So I think that was Incenso. So was there a bound for eta for example U1 spin liquid?
Yeah. So I think it should be larger than the bound of the SO5 Dickenfeld efficientization. So yeah. Basically, you can just bootstrap the SO3 vector, that's your spin correlator, right? And require that there's no relevant singlet. And then you can obtain a lower bound for eta.
So that 0.5
is it should be large. I don't quite remember the value. It's probably 0.5-ish or 0.6-ish.
But how is that calculated?
I mean, conformal bootstrap, right?
You said bootstrap, all right.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe it's Tsenka, I think that was you. Can you comment on your theory for this, maybe, so we have some discussion, if I may?
So I have one question. Regarding the your most recent work in the level crossing, you plot in terms of 1/1 maybe.
Well, yeah, 1/1 L² basically.
Right, but in the cylinder, I guess it also had a scaling just 1/L.
Yeah, it's right, the, well, it's the same. So here it's 1/N, and you know N is the total number of spins. So you know L is square root. So it's really 1/L², and then it's actually the same here as well.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I mean, we have studied this in 1D. I mentioned, you know, at the previous question that we also had done a one-dimensional model. Sorry, this is a bad way to do it. We also have done a one-dimensional model with long-range interaction. So it's just the Heisenberg model, Heisenberg chain, with unfrustrated long-range interaction. So they decay like a power law, and there's a sign that makes it frustrated. This is just a normalization, so don't worry about that. But J2 is frustrating. So in that model, you know for sure that you have exactly, you know, you have an L phase, because if this alpha is very small, you know, you can have long-range order in antiferromagnetic order in 1D as well. And you know that if alpha is very large and J2 is small, then it's just like the 1D chain I told you about before. It has a transition from a what you can say is a critical spin liquid, you know, with Z equals 1, if you like, to the dimerized phase. And it turns out that, you know, you see really exactly the same type of level crossings as we saw in the Shasta-Sutherland model. Here are some levels. Here we call, you know, H is actually the inverse of this power law of the exponent, and we see exactly the same kind. These gaps even occur in the same order as in the Shasta-Sutherland model and extrapolate to two different points. And here we can, we know for sure that this is a gapless spin liquid here. It's the Heisenberg chain kind of state, Betansatz chain.
So in this 1D case, I guess 1/N² scaling is pretty established. But you don't have explanation for 2D, why it's like 1/L.
Yeah, exactly. So in 1D, I think it follows from the field theory. But to be honest, I see people always saying it in papers that it should be, but I haven't been able to track down exactly, you know, where it's rigorously shown. But in 2D, yeah, we have found it in many cases beyond what I talked about here. It always seems to be 1/L², and we don't know why. So that would be really nice to, if somebody could figure that out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So even when you say 2D, right, it's a cylinder.
That's right.
So is it effectively just like 1D and it's going
Because it's L times 2L, right? So it's if you keep the ratio, so it's like here, this length is, so we call L the y direction length, and 2L is in the x direction. So it's, if we take L to infinity, it's really 2D, not a 1D situation, right?
Right, okay.
Yeah, I guess. So in this interpolation between Shastri-Sutherland and J, B, Q, whatever, this phase diagram is function of, small h. Can you also go to negative small h to increase the spin liquid?
Oh, yes, good point. Yes, in fact, we can, and we have done that, and the spin liquid does increase, yeah. So we have not yet published, the work on combining these models, but Ling Wang, she already has both exact diagonalization and DMRG results, and she's doing more, but she can already see that if we pull this line down, well, it go to negative h, like you said, it's like increasing the spin liquid. Yeah.
Nice.
Good point.
Okay. More questions? Thank you.
Thank you.